Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is the Athletics Football GM Podcast. And now, the Athletics Mike Sando and former NFL Executive of the Year Randy Mueller.
Welcome to the Football GM Podcast. Mike Sando here, senior writer from The Athletic, along with the GM, Randy Mueller. Good morning, Randy.
Morning, Mike. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing better than the Eagles. We're going to talk about them this week. My goodness. We're going to talk about some of the GM openings. Maybe at this rate, the Eagles will be on that list too. But we got four already. I almost can't remember that during the season. We're going to talk a little bit about something I wrote about this week, which is the Lions and Matthew Stafford. Would you trade them? We've got our picks, some good games this week, our Ask the GM segment. But Randy, let's just get right in to the Philadelphia Eagles. I was looking last night at the preseason MVP odds, right? So the sportsbook will put it out. Carson Wentz had the same MVP odds as Aaron Rodgers.
Why not? Yeah, why not?
They don't look similar right now. First off, just the optics of that game last night, horrific. I mean, we're in the first half and they're showing tight shots of the GM and the owner. At least the owner was there this week. I mean, Jeffrey Lurie wasn't even there before. What do you make of this mess?
Yeah, it's definitely a mess, Mike. I agree with you. The quality of what they're rolling out there every week cannot just be a simple blame. I mean, everybody's got a little piece of this action, and I think for the most part they would all be accountable, but I'm just shocked at the digression of Carson Wentz and where he's gone from, like you said, from MVP status to, gosh, should he even keep his job? I guess I see just total disconnect throughout the organization, you know, whether it's acquiring free agents or drafting players. I mean, you don't have to look further than the Jalen Hurts saga, right? I mean, the GM picks him in the second round. I think they thought they were going to get a Taysom Hill type player. Yep. I don't think anybody really thought this guy was a starting NFL quarterback, even the Eagles at that point. But they've had no plan since the day they brought him in as to what to do with him. And it was evidenced last night. I mean, they rolled him out there for three plays. It was an absolute waste of time. I mean, I have no idea what they were doing.
What are you accomplishing? What would that accomplish?
It wasted everybody's time. Plus, it throws another thing on the back of Carson Wentz for him to say, and not that he's thin-skinned, he's not, but he can say, what the heck are they trying to do here? I mean, they run him out there. They don't even have a package in the game for him. He runs two passes. One got canceled out because of penalty, but they're just basic throws, and there's no Taysom Hill package at all. So I think they forgot to bring Sean Payton when they drafted Jalen Hurts, because that kind of offensive, you know, prowess is needed if you're going to use a guy like him. It's just crazy.
Yep. And so I think obviously there's, after a season like this, there's going to be change, right? This is not one of those, hey, we stay the course. So there's going to be blame. We know the owner's irate, right? I mean, he did say that he might have, there was some report that he might have missed the game last week because he was going to go visit his mother and yeah, wanted to be extra safe. But come on. I mean, I think, you know, clearly he's upset, as I would be, as you would be, yeah, if we owned the team. I mean, I would be very happy, number one, that I had a lot of money. But I'd be very upset about the course of the team. So somebody's going to get blamed. And I think it's all set up for it to be Doug Peterson. And here's why. Number one, they're committed financially to Carson Wentz. That's a hard one to get out of. Quarterbacks are probably the hardest thing to replace. You can find guys to do other things. And he's been good before. So right, there's probably going to be an effort next year to salvage him. I think that while you could make a case for sure that Howie Roseman has not done a good job of GM recently, he's a survivor. He's been there forever. He's got the owner's ear. He's
no doubt
done whatever it takes to ride these things out. He's lost the GM title. He's got it back. He's deferred to Chip Kelly. He's yeah, taken over for Chip Kelly. He is probably the one that, unless Jeffrey Lurie gets so upset that he throws everything out and hits reset, he probably comes back. I think last offseason we saw there were coaching changes and it was handled weirdly. If you remember, Doug Peterson said we were going to come back with my guys on the staff, and then like the next day they fired the guys on the staff. That's the disconnect you're talking about. And now I think it's set up for the GM to say, hey, look, we told you some staff changes need to be made. These haven't worked out. That's on you. Doug Peterson goes, and I think it's hard to argue against that happening because, like you said, where's the creativity? Where's the game plan? What value is Doug Peterson adding?
Right. Well, the only thing that outdoes that is the awful execution of whatever they decide to do, because the execution isn't there either. And again, we're not getting away. I don't think we are. I'm not getting away from the faults of Carson Wentz. I mean, he missed guys wide open last night. He missed some elementary throws off play action pass that I think you or I might be able to make. I mean, they were simple throws and he missed those. So his headspace is totally somewhere else. But I think you're right. Someone's going to have to take the fall for it. And I agree with everything you said about the combatants that are involved. I do think Howie Roseman is going to have to take a hard look at how he evaluates and how he team builds. And I think it would only be fair that there has to be some changes in that philosophy. The disconnect for me is that they've acquired players that don't fit what this scheme wants and what these coaches want. So there's a rub there right from the start. And I don't know how you can fill a job when you don't know what the job description is. And that's really what the case is with these players. The job description isn't clear and there's just a bunch of gray area. I think it started when they really overvalued their own players, which happens once you get to a Super Bowl. I mean, it's a 500 team since they won the Super Bowl. And they continue to pay their own guys and value some of those guys who were just average players, but were part of that. So everybody loves them, right? So you've made some mistakes with your cap, and that's put you in a tough spot. It's going to be hard going forward to kind of re-piece and rebuild this, I think, without some outside eyes coming in. I always liked to, when I was a GM, take a look at somebody from the outside to our organization that I really knew and trusted. I'd have them come look at some film just to give me an outside perspective. I don't see a lot of GMs do that nowadays. And again, that's just my personal preference. I wanted to be on the straight and narrow with what I valued on our team. And to get somebody else's opinion of it, hey, you can throw it away if you don't want it, but it's another set of eyes without an agenda. It's an independent value of your own team. And I think that's what this team needs more than anything, is needs some outside influence.
Do you think that over the course of the remainder of this season, which is probably not going to be pretty, right? They're going to lose more games.
No doubt.
Can the owner get to the point where he decides the whole thing needs to be reset? Or do you think that Howie Roseman probably just survives because he always does?
Well, I think you're correct in that your assessment of Howie being a survivor. He understands what has to be done. We're going to talk about later some of these GM jobs that are the basis for how they get filled. Everybody has an agenda, so it so seems, and we understand Howie and what he's trying to do there. I do think, and I base this on a couple things I heard last week, in that their practices, it was rumored and leaked out that their practices were shaky. They're all over the place. They're not disciplined. Their pack practices are sloppy. Yep. And if it's true that the owner walked away from a couple of those, that gives me a little bit of definitely pause as to him buying off on the whole operation without a fair amount of change. Because that, to me, lies in the whole culture and structure. If your practices are like that, you're not going to get any better. It's the definition of insanity, right? Just to keep doing what you're doing and expect to get different results. So there definitely has to be enough change. And I think that's what the NFL is about. Even the teams that win and prosper have to find ways to keep it fresh and make enough change to where everybody's hungry to come back again. And I think that's something the Eagles haven't done. They haven't been able to keep it fresh since they won the Super Bowl with enough change to keep striving forward. I used to have this conversation. In fact, I had it a few years back with Nick Saban after he'd won two or three championships at Alabama. I said, Coach, what do you do now? And he said, I just don't know. He said, I got to keep it fresh. So that's on everybody's mind. You have to be able to stand that prosperity.
Yep, absolutely. And one last point on the Eagles. Are you excited for Carson Wentz's future? Do you think that he's a real guy? Something that struck me last night was on Twitter, of all places. But I mean, Bruce Irvin tweeted something last night that was basically completely disrespectful of Carson Wentz, okay, that you wouldn't normally say about a fellow competitor. It was, I can't remember the exact term, but it was kind of a slang for this guy is worse than you could even imagine, right? I've always felt some sort of a disconnect between Carson Wentz and the other guys on the team. I mean, we've heard little rumblings that come out about this or that, and it concerns me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel that, like, just the optics of it, I don't feel like he's got that team. And I think part of that goes back to Foles won the Super Bowl and all that type of stuff. But if you're just looking at this and kind of square it with your evaluation of him coming out, because I think people in the league have loved Carson Wentz, been really high on him, given him the benefit of the doubt. That's the guy they want to have. Is he the guy that the locker room wants to have? Are you concerned about just him?
Right. I think, you know, sometimes, and I don't know how the locker room feels, but I can give you the view from 30,000 feet. And remember, they had this view of Russell Wilson in Seattle a few years ago as well. Remember, there was a little disconnect.
Yeah.
People didn't really know if he was the guy in the locker room either. For one thing, Carson Wentz has never lost. You know, he won in college. He won national championships in college. This is his first really run through of, hey, this stuff's hard. You know, we've been knocked off our pedestal here, and how do we get back up? He's never had that happen in his career or really in his life, so to speak, in his football life. So I understand what people are saying, and it might take him winning the Super Bowl to get over that, because his game itself is obviously gone awry, whether it's accuracy, whether it's not seeing the field, he's not making good decisions. His mechanics, his poise under pressure, it's almost like Jordan Spieth in the golf game, right? All of a sudden he wins the U.S. Open and he disappears. You know, that's kind of what this is, a case of.
Yep.
Carson Wentz has the yips. You saw him last night, double clutch, triple clutch sometimes, and his timing's off. Everything's
horrific.
Haywire with this guy's game, yeah. So it does give you pause, that's for sure. I don't think that it's anything that can't be fixed, but he's going to have to carry this team on his back some way, somehow, to get the respect of others around the league and of himself. And it's really a tough spot to put him in, because I don't know that he has any weapons to help him along the way. So it's definitely a one-man show currently.
Yep, it's a reset. Well, the GM and head coach are still in place there for now. I think it's remarkable this season, though, that we've got four GM jobs opening. Sometimes these jobs just don't open. Even when the guys have bad records, sometimes they don't open. And then other times, here we go. We've got four of those. We've got three head coaching or jobs open as well. But I want to talk about these GM jobs and just sort of the dynamics of them. So we've got Atlanta, Jacksonville, Houston, and Detroit are open. So Atlanta fired Thomas Dimitroff. He was 113-90, went 4-6 in the playoffs with a Super Bowl. Pretty successful run, I think we would say, for him. Bill O'Brien, kind of that quasi-coach GM, but as the GM, he was 10-10. But there was obviously a lot of history there that preceded him. Bob Quinn fired from Detroit, 31-43-1, 0-1 in the playoffs. And then Dave Caldwell fired from Jacksonville, 37-86, 2-1 in the playoffs. They had that one year when they actually almost got to the Super Bowl against New England, but otherwise really a tough situation in Jacksonville. So four spots open. You're going to inherit two old quarterbacks, Atlanta and Detroit, or you're going to have a young, good quarterback in Houston, or you're going to have no quarterback in Jacksonville, but maybe you've got picks to get him. So different types of jobs, different organizations. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting is people assume that all these teams are going to now go out and try to find the best GM possible. They're going to open it up to everybody. God, if we could just find the best GM. And that is not at all what happens. And sometimes it happens. But as you know, Randy, and as you know, having been a candidate yourself, having been a GM, what can you tell us just about this process and maybe how it doesn't meet the eye, right? It's not exactly what people think it is.
Yeah, it's a lot of moving parts. There's no question. And you point out the four jobs that are open, and there may be a couple more. I mean, we haven't even talked about, you know, Chicago and maybe the Giants and some of these other ones. So it's definitely open season on GMs, and it's always open season on coaches. So nobody said it's an easy game, that's for sure. But yeah, the dynamics at each of these places are different because, like you say, you'd think it would be simple to go hire a GM, but at least with my experiences going through this a couple times and having been a GM, it's really, it's about the commitment starting with the owner of what he wants to do and how much change they're willing to to adapt to. I think sometimes you have people within your own building who have different agendas, maybe than the owner, or definitely different than the fan base who just want to win for the most part. So there's a lot of internal adjusting, internal positioning, really to kind of work their agendas so that the people that are there that have the owner's ear can still have their say and still have that ear. But sometimes it takes a full reset. I know when I went from Seattle to New Orleans, and I credit Tom Benson for this, he was willing to allow me to do it any way I wanted. And that's the only reason I did it. He completely cleared the decks and allowed me to set it up exactly how we wanted to. There were no other people around. There was no other philosophy or system in place. And those are the ideal jobs when you get that type of authority that comes with the job. So I think you're right. It'll be interesting to see how these jobs evolve and how filling them evolve as well. The other thing is, everybody always makes these lists of GMs, of this and that. There's so much more involved in hiring a GM and in what I would look for in a candidate. So maybe we'll get into some of that at some point. But there's a lot of interesting things that happen behind closed doors. It's not as simple like you mentioned.
Yeah, and I'll get to sort of what I was alluding to in terms of, okay, you'd think if you're the owner, how do we find the best GM? And that's what so much of the focus in the media is, of who would be the best candidate. But let's just take a team like the New York Giants, okay? The New York Giants had Jerry Reese as their GM for a long time. And then they fired Jerry Reese. Things weren't going as well. And so then they hire a new GM, but they hire Dave Gettleman, who worked with Jerry Reese, trained by the same person. That's not a GM change. That was a team that was not willing to, it was only willing to go so far. They wanted a different person in the job, but they weren't really changing the direction of where they were going. I think Detroit's very interesting to me because, oh, we need a new GM. Yeah, but are you really going to get someone who's completely different? Are you really going to overhaul your system? And then within each building, you have people that are involved in the process. So you may have in some of these places, the salary cap guy, he may be advising the owner. He may have kind of a vote, right? You may have a no team doubt. President.
Yep.
Well, the team president may not want to bring in someone who changes the way the team president has to do his job. And I'll give you, another example personal to you, Randy, because I was there at the time too. I remember I was covering the Seahawks when they hired Mike Holmgren as the coach and GM. That's a hugely disruptive move. That threatened every single person in the building. It was suddenly different. The willingness of an owner to do that. Look at Indianapolis.
Yep.
Okay, Indianapolis had a really great run with Bill Polian as the GM. They could have just promoted Tom Telesco, who is now with the Chargers, as the GM and continue it. But Jim Irsay is willing to mix it up. He hires Ryan Grigson, totally different. And right. Then when that doesn't work, he's willing to go to Chris Ballard, who's totally different from him. You know what I mean? And that's what you're talking about with Tom Benson. Exactly. These are owners who have been willing to almost become vulnerable, don't you? You become vulnerable if you're willing to accept full change.
Yes, 100%. And I think sometimes Dallas is an example of that for me. You know, that's a team that everybody says how bad Jerry wants to win. And I totally agree. Jerry does want to win. He's a very competitive person. And I'm talking about Jerry Jones, the owner. But they've really not been willing to change the non-coaching side of their operation really since Jimmy left, right? So it's been 25 years of viewing players, of team building, of coming up with the way they build their team. It hasn't changed. And I remember having this conversation with Jerry many years ago. He said, yeah, we probably should do, think about changing that side. We've never had a change of philosophy or a change in system. Well, we're 15 years later and that still hasn't happened. So I think that does make you vulnerable, without a doubt. But sometimes I think you've got to be vulnerable to move ahead. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck with the same results.
Yeah. Looking at these four jobs that are open, Atlanta, Jacksonville, Houston, Detroit, is there a clear favorite for you based on the dynamics? Or, does it just come down to who the quarterback is? Or, does one look more appealing? Jacksonville looks like more of a refresh, right? Starting from scratch. And some of these other ones, you may come in and feel pressure to win with Matt Ryan or Matt Stafford or Deshaun Watson or whatever. You go into, to me, Houston is the most promising, but then you got to deal with Jack Easterby or whatever. Yeah. Nothing against Jack, but it's a weird setup,
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about with some of the agendas that are at work inside the building. I'll be honest with you, the one that, and I base this on ownership and their commitment to winning, but also what they say. They kind of walk the leadership line. I mean, it's their ball, right? I was impressed by some of the things the Detroit owner said the other day when asked about Stafford. Likewise, was I impressed in Atlanta when they get asked about these quarterbacks that are icons within their own organization and have been there for 10 or 15 years. But she said in Detroit, Stafford, she can't decide that. That's going to be up to the next decision, the next coach or GM or whoever. That kind of tells me she gets it. They are not fans. They are business people that are very successful in their own right. So I like to hear that. I think the Detroit job is one that, one, they, the ownership there is awesome. They back whatever you want to do. They've always taken good care of their people. They care about the people that they employ. That's a fact. And I think that one is prime for a turnaround, mainly because they also have had, they've come off the New England way, right? The Patriot way with GM Bob Quinn and head coach Matt Patricia. And let's face it, three of these four teams that are looking now have come off the Patriot way. So I think the change in culture, the change in how we deal with people is a fact as well. And I see that as being prime in Detroit. I think those people just want to be led. They have good people in the personnel department. I've known them for years. They have very competent people there. I just think they want to be directed and led in a good way, in one that they can believe in. And I think Detroit is set up for that.
So how can we say, though, I love this idea that they have good ownership there because they never win. I mean, you'd think with good ownership, you'd win a game. You know, I think I've said this before, Jim Caldwell is the only guy there who's had a winning record as a regular full-time coach in almost 50 years. So what is it that makes you like the ownership there? Just that they support whoever's in charge? Or, you know, have they just had the wrong people in charge all the time or what?
Here's the thing. The Detroit ownership has never really picked a player. They've never built the team. They've always allowed those people to do it. And when you jump into a prime seat like that, that's what you want. They want to be led. They just want to win. They're going to do everything they can to help you. And that's why I think it's a good spot, because they will not be in the middle of anything. If a decision makes sense, you want it to make sense to ownership. You want it to make sense to everybody above you. But at the same time, they're going to support you no matter what. And they've shown they will do that. So I think it's been in Detroit about just picking the right people to hitch your wagon to. That's where they struggled. And you're right. Maybe Jim Caldwell was the right guy, but he wasn't deemed that by Bob Quinn when he came from New England. So there was a disconnect there. The other thing about these, and I hear this all the time, well, these new jobs, coaches are attaching themselves to GMs and they go as a package deal. That's fine and dandy for, you know, I guess the initial approach, because the guys know each other, but they're also limiting when they come from the same team of their exposure to doing things any other way as well. They come with the same idea and that may or may not work. The same approach, the same idea hasn't equated to great success outside of New England, because you can't bring Belichick, you can't bring Brady. So that way doesn't necessarily ensure success, as we found out over the last 15 years when guys have spun out of this thing.
I'm with you 100%. I love it when guys have been different places, seen different ways of doing things, because that sort of almost arrogance of there's one way to do it, that's such bold.
No matter where they come from, and we're not beating up on New England, but it could come from anywhere. You know,
could come from anywhere, and I always feel like if you're in this game long enough, you'll be humbled. You know, everyone, if you're in this game long enough, you're going to be 500, and if you're above 500, you haven't been in it long enough. You know what I mean? You're going to learn that there's more than one way to do this, and you know how you treat people and all those things. Okay, I want to get into Detroit more, but I also want to ask you about just the GM role in particular, as people try to figure out what a good candidate for their team would be. What does that person have to do? Because I think we do have a perception of them, as basically people who master the draft. That's sort of what people think a GM is.
Right.
But it's different than that. And so as we evaluate the candidates for this, what do you think is most important for them to be able to do?
Yeah, I think you hit on a good point, Mike, in that there's a misnomer out there of what these GM jobs are. And sometimes ownership rely on a search firm, or sometimes even there's a committee that's kind of run by the league, really, that recommends people. They can do that and they can recommend people, but the skill set that I think are musts really aren't going to come from numbers or analytics or anything like that. You know, you've got to find a communicator. You've got to find a guy that can not only just sit around and pick players like everybody thinks the GM does, which really, in all truthfulness, happens about 25% of the time. I wish you had more time to look at all that. And that's why you have to be a communicator, because you have to listen to others. I always liked the idea of that GM having a football background, because yeah, you can listen to others, but at the end of the day, you can make up your own mind as well, because you can sit down and look at the film. So I think that's important. You also have to be a consensus builder. You've got to build consensus within your building. You've got to have coaches on the same page. You've got to have scouts on the same page. And there's no harm if they're not. It's just one of those things where if they're not, you're probably better off picking a different lane. I think you just bring you breed a little contempt when you force players, when you force different aspects of building the team. That's why I always say, if you look at a player, Mike, and I look at a player, and we're completely different, or even if we're a little bit different, guess what? The truth is probably in the middle somewhere. And that's what I mean about consensus building. It's not about you being right or me being right. It's really about what's right for the team. So you've got to come up with these ways to build consensus when you add players in free agency or in the draft or make cap decisions. The GM has to be a communicator first. He's got to be a consensus builder second. And he definitely has to have a natural leadership skill. And I don't know how search firms and these committees and all that can put forth names of natural leaders per se. I know they talk to people, but people are different when they're under the gun as well. I would hope they would find somebody that's had to make some decisions, that's had to manage people. I think the biggest thing that goes under the radar on a GM is managing people. That's half of your job, is managing the people in the building and communicating with them. So that's a trait that's hard to evaluate if you're an outsider looking in to find that right guy. I think you've got to do an exhaustive search of talking to people, not necessarily just taking names and using numbers as to where that guy has come from. So I think there's a lot that go into it. I think the philosophy is very important of that person you hire as your head decision maker, and how that philosophy goes in a partnership with the coach. You know, I've worked under coaches, I've worked equal with coaches, and I've worked as the coach's boss. To me, it's no different. I'm not going to do anything that the coach doesn't sign off on regardless, and vice versa. I just think you're better off picking a lane that has some consensus in it. So I think there's a lot of things, a lot of ways. That's why these interviews, you know, should take a full day or two. You know, nobody has this kind of time anymore, it seems like, but I think these type of hires deserve a drill down of every detail that we're talking about. And I'm just hitting the top of these issues. There's a lot more things that go into this as well. So,
but in a pandemic, Randy, too, I mean, this is, you're going to be sitting there behind masks somewhere or on a Zoom call talking to candidates. I mean, it's an interesting time to be looking for one. So,
Although I will say this, it's your most important hire, so you better take your time and get it right. I think you can get it right. It's just a matter of, there's a lot of pressure on ownership and presidents now in hiring the right guy.
Yep, absolutely. So we talked about Detroit. I agree. I thought Detroit was one of the best coach openings last time, too. I really liked Detroit for some of those reasons. Although Matt Stafford's now 32. He missed half the season last year. He's been a little beat up this year. I think he had a finger injury. I wouldn't say he's, you know, doesn't look like he's just playing his absolute best ball of his career this year. But I found it pretty interesting after they announced the firings there that his backup, his old longtime buddy backup, within a half an hour, Dan Orlovsky says, "God, this would be, they need to move on from each other," which, Randy, Dan Orlovsky's not saying that unless he's on the same page with Matt, right? Like if you and I are buddies and there's something going on with you in the news, I don't just come out and say what my opinion is on it.
You think he might be the messenger in this case?
Yeah. That's what I'm sort of saying here. Yeah. And so doesn't really mean anything. I mean, if somebody comes in and wants to have Matt Stafford, but if you were coming in there as the GM and just sort of knowing, okay, you're trying to reset this thing, right? I mean, it's been a losing culture or whatever. Yeah. And for whatever reason, with Matt Stafford, they haven't won games. I mean, they haven't been in the playoffs. He's had some great seasons. He's had some great plays. Right. But he hasn't done it. And in some ways, he is a representative of – he's associated with that malaise, okay?
Yeah. Yep. He's part talented. Of the past. There's no running.
He's
from
part
that.
Of the past. So, Randy, if I'm the owner of the Lions and I'm bringing you in for an interview of what should we do? What should we do with him? I mean, would you consider moving him? Would you just want a fresh start, Or would you be coming in more like, hey, look, we're not that far away. I mean, Matt, we just got to do this and this, and we can win with Matt this year. What's your thought on him and what they should do?
Yeah, it is a great question. And I think, I don't know that we can really answer truly from afar without getting in and turning over the, finding where all the bodies lie. You know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously, Detroit's not won a division title. They haven't won a playoff game in 12 years that Matt has been there. In fact, they haven't won a playoff game in 29 years. So
yeah,
it's been a while. It reminds me actually of when I went to the Saints in 2000 and they had never won a playoff game in franchise history. So I used to say, and I remember the media used to kind of ask me this all the time, really, when you take a job like this, you can't be hesitant of the past. You really can't, because it really doesn't matter. What we do going forward from day one when we get there matters.
That's what I kind of wanted to know. You know, go ahead.
But having said that, I think you have to analyze the past a little bit because you do have a carryover. I know when I went to New Orleans, I don't want to bring this back about me at all. I'm just saying it's a pretty good parallel. I think we made like 30 some roster adjustments the first 2 months we were there. Yeah. We wanted to, without saying it, we wanted to clean out the past. Now, we didn't have a quarterback, so we had to go find a new one. I think in this case, to answer your question about Stafford, you're going to have to spend some time with Matt Stafford. I would want to drill down with him exactly where he is in his life, where he is in his career, and see what makes him tick and see how, if he's even up for this battle. Let's face it, he's been through a ton of rebuilds. He's been through many coaches. I want to know where his heart is. Is he in or is he out? I think the Detroit issue is culture, and you're either, you know, part of fixing it or you're part of the past. And I want to know what his, you know, where he sits. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to replace him unless you have found another quarterback, for one thing. You're going to have to fall in love with somebody else. I would definitely not move this guy without having the next step already solved. So whether that's a way to pick in the top two or three, and you have to love one of these quarterbacks coming out, that's another one. I don't think Detroit's going to be in the top two or three picks. I think they're going to be outside the top five. So I don't know if that's possible to even consider drafting one up there. Then you're going to have to figure out what, like I said, where his heart is. You're going to have to find out, does it make sense from a cap standpoint? You know, he's set to get a roster bonus, I think, in February that's going to guarantee him, you know, a lot of money next year. And $35 million for a quarterback seems like some exorbitant amount, but it's really exorbitant when your cap's $175 million. So that's a pretty good number to attach to one quarterback. So he can't be half in, half out under a year when the cap's going to be reduced like that. So I think if you did trade him, you'd probably save in the neighborhood of, the way I looked at his contract, about $10 million. You know, that might mean something in the end, but not enough to pull the trigger either way. So there's a lot of information that has to be gathered with Matt Stafford, with kind of where he's at, with how ownership feels about him as well. So the whole situation, though, gave me a lot of similar thoughts as to when I went to the Saints in 2000. It can be sorted out. It can be done. But I like the idea of starting with a clean slate somehow, some way. And I think Stafford is going to go a long ways toward starting with that clean slate or not. So that's number one decision for sure.
Yeah. I think if I'm going in there, he's one of the assets I want to have there, you know, because I think you know, if you're naming other quarterbacks in a league you'd rather have than him, you know, there are, you know,
very few.
But you might name five, or you might name 10, or you might name 11, but you're not going to name 25. You know what I mean? So you're not just going to randomly put yourself in a worse situation at that position. And so he can be part of the solution moving forward if mentally he wants to do it. And to me, I wrote about this in my Pick Six column on Monday. I see him as Carson Palmer to me. I think Carson Palmer really got tired of the ownership in Cincinnati and got to the point where he didn't want to play. I mean, he said, you know what, trade me or I'll just retire. And he actually walked away. And eventually they traded him to the Raiders for a first and a second. Didn't go so great there because they were maybe even a worse organization at that time than the Bengals were. But he was able to get with somebody. You know, he got with Arizona, and they had a pretty good defense and you know, had some stability at the coaching spot. I think they promoted Steve Keim to be the GM. There was at least something there. He had a nice little finish to his career that I don't think he would have had he stayed in Cincinnati. And if you're the Lions, your job is not to find the place for Matthew Stafford to have a nice finish to his career. But if I'm Matt Stafford, I'm looking at that example and I'm going, yeah, maybe it is time. Maybe it is time to move on. And
I do think one quick point on that might lead Stafford to whether he's in or out is the GM hire itself. don't know that Stafford is going to be all fired up about a first-time GM with no proven track record of any kind. I think that's going to be a little bit of a issue for him. I think, you know, he might be better served with some more experience around him that he can trust and believe in and actually tangibly see that, hey, these guys have done this before. So, you know, it'll be an interesting thing that gets addressed the minute the hire is made. That's probably the first call somebody makes.
Yep, no doubt about it. So the Lions this week are playing the Bears. We're not going to pick that game, Randy.
game, but yeah, there's better ones out there.
Randy, I want to get to our pick segment here before the clock runs low. Last week, I got to say, I need to go to Vegas because this is working out pretty good. I had Tennessee over Indy, took it. I had New England over Arizona, took it. I think we both had Kansas City at Tampa Bay, and they didn't cover. So that one went the other way. This week, we've got some more really good games and maybe one that isn't as good but is interesting to me. Let's go in the AFC South division with Indy at Houston. The Colts are favored by 2.5. Makes me a little nervous after what I saw from Indy last week. Do you think they bounce back? Would you take the Colts and give the 2.5?
Well, I'm going to go with my old steadfast theory here of maybe the more desperate team wins the game. And I do think Indy's more desperate. You know, they got their brains beat in last week by Tennessee, so they've got to come back with a vengeance. Unfortunately, it's against a kind of revitalized Houston offense and team that's playing actually pretty good right now. I think Indy has to come back to running the ball and figure out a way to do things with the identity that's got them this far. I'm going to pick them in the game at Houston, just figuring they need this game more than ever before to bounce back. Yeah. And I think they're desperate. And I think I trust Philip Rivers in this setting. And I trust Frank Reich to go back to what they did best to get him here. And I think Indy wins the game.
So I don't trust Rivers as much, and I would normally take Deshaun Watson in this. I was going to go that way, but I will go with Indy. I think it's a gut check time for them, and I think with Houston losing Will Fuller, and I think they lost Bradley Roby as well to suspensions, maybe that's where it catches up to them against a good sort of Indy operation, right? I think Indy gets it back. I'll give the 2.5. I think Indy maybe wins by a field goal or 7. The Rams are at Arizona, man. Was Sean McVay hot after that game last week? I mean, he was basically said our quarterback's got to do a better job protecting the football. The Rams are favored by 1.5. I'm going to give it. I'm going to go with the Rams. I think that they are going to bounce back against an Arizona team that's pretty good this season, but I think you can defend them. I think we're seeing some teams that with good defenses be able to make it so that Kyler Murray isn't as two-dimensional. And when he is not running around all over the place, I think they can be managed. I think we saw that a little bit with New England last week. So I will take the Rams. I'll give the points. How about you?
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I like the Rams as well. I think the one thing we have proven so far this year is that Sean McVay can make a game plan to beat anybody on any given Sunday. I trust that he will. I did like the fact that he kind of shook up Goff a little bit with a couple of the comments. Sometimes Goff is, for me, a little bit of a slow blinker, and it showed last week. He just didn't do things as quickly as I would have liked him to. He wasn't as decisive, and obviously that's something that Sean has to deal with weekly. But the other thing I think has kind of gone unnoticed is Arizona lost a couple defensive players due to injury. Corey Peters was one a couple weeks ago, and they've struggled to be that same defense, especially when it comes to stopping the run. I think the Rams would like to run the ball a little more than they have the last couple weeks. I see them doing that. I see them doing it for two reasons. One, to make it easier for Goff, but two, to keep Kyler Murray off the field. So I'm with you. I'm going to pick the Rams as well. I do think they are desperate to come up and stay in the playoff picture clearly, and I think they need this game bad.
You know, Randy, one of the real true highlights for me of having these types of conversations is you pick up great little sayings like slow blinker. I mean, do you remember where you first heard that? That's just outstanding. You know, it's just sort of, I love those types of terms when you know you're talking to real football people because, you listen to sports talk radio for 1,000 years, and you're never going to hear someone say that. So where'd you get that one?
I can't remember. I don't. Hey, sometimes when we evaluate players, certain things just come to our mind, and quick, decisive decision making, and a snap throw here or there is not.
I'm just picturing you. I'm picturing a view in a film room sometime long ago with Chuck Knox and a couple guys smoking. Remember when everybody smoked? A couple guys smoking and, you know, the 5 o'clock club when guys go and start drinking back in the old days. And using that term, it just sort of perked up the pick segment for me. The last game I wanted to pick was New England at the Chargers. And the Chargers are favored by one.
Why do you want to pick this game?
Oh, yeah, it's a good question. Maybe we don't have to. The reason I want to is because the Chargers just fascinate me as a team that has this young quarterback but can't manage a game. And obviously New England's got their own issues, but I think I'd go with New England.
Based on coaching? Is that where you're getting at? The coaching, the game plan, the whole execution?
And just defending the rookie quarterback. It's a good question. Why did I pick this game? Why did I pick New England, Arizona last week? Because I thought New England was going to win the game.
You
know what I mean? As a team, it's not a good team. But I think when you play against a team like Arizona, which is better than the Chargers probably, but when you play against a team that is beatable, that's good, mm-hmm. maybe has some promise, but there's a path to beating them. I'm interested in the teams like New England that aren't a good team. I don't think New England is a good team, but I'm not shocked at all that they beat Arizona. And I, even though the Chargers are favored, maybe the wrong team's favored. Am I wrong here?
Well, I understand why. I think people are just seeing the Chargers really for what they are. And gosh, I lived this for 10 years, so it seems like this record has been broken and this one's played already. But they've just found ways to screw things up. And I think every week we learn something new that, gosh, if we'd have just managed this different or managed that just slightly different, we'd be, 8-3 instead of 3-8 or whatever they are. And I think the reflection, the line, it reflects the distrust that they have this should be a 6-point game in my mind, talent-wise, maybe 7-point. The Chargers are more talented than New England, but nobody's believing that they'll do the right thing. And I think I'm with you on this. I think I would rather trust New England and the plan that Bill Belichick will put forth than Anthony Lynn and where the Chargers are at right now. I think they're in a little bit of, I don't want to say disarray, because I kind of like some of the things they've done. It's just that they can't get out of their own way. And it seems like that's been the Charger way for a long time.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's time for Ask the GM.
Before we wrap up here, let's hit our Ask the GM segment. Thank you, everybody, for sending in your questions. This is our question for you, Randy. We hear the word consensus thrown around a lot when talking about talent acquisitions. You always hear that on draft day, right? Why'd you draft this guy? This was the highest guy on our board. We all agreed. What does it really mean, and how do you build consensus as the final decision maker, in an organization?
I think it's a good question, Mike. It's something we hit on a little bit earlier in the podcast, so I kind of gave away our answer. But I do think to build a consensus, you've got to have a final end result in mind. So you have to have a job description when you acquire a player. You've got to know exactly what you're going to do with him. And I use the example of Jalen Hurts. I just don't think the Eagles had an idea what to do with this guy. It sounded like a great idea and how he got a bell or a whistle or whatever you want, but they've done nothing with it. In this case, when you're building consensus, whether it's the GM and the coach, an assistant coach and a scout, you hear from all these people. Everybody brings their opinion to the table, right? And you discuss this ad nauseum. And I think there's an art as a decision maker in listening. So you have to listen to everybody. But again, I always like to, and I mentioned this, I like to have the ace in my back pocket in that I can at least look at my own film and have my own decision or my own opinion, I should say. But I'm going to listen to all that's been said, and then the truth usually lies somewhere in the middle. I've been a part of rooms in the past where sometimes it was more important for a specific person to be right, and they never reached a happy medium. They never reached a consensus. And it's hard. None of us are smarter than all of us. So I think we have to use everybody's opinion, build it as a consensus for, the team. What's best for the team? That's what really matters. It doesn't matter if I'm right. I got to check my ego at the door. And I tell scouts, I tell coaches all the same thing. You got to check it at the door. We're going to do what's best for us going forward. So if you can't agree, I think you're, again, like I said earlier, you're best picking a different lane. You've got to have everybody on the same boat when you pick a player, when you add a free agent. Everybody has to have a clear vision of what we're going to do with this player. And you would be shocked, Mike, at how many times this happens when that's not the case. When you have added a player and you wonder, now what do we do with him? We're now 6 weeks in, you still haven't done what you said you were going to do with them. So that continued communication of what we're going to do with players and how we're going to plan his future then has to be executed in order to have a little bit of integrity with your own club when you build your team. So a long-winded answer. I apologize, but that's kind of some of the things that entered my mind.
It's great stuff. And, in all of these discussions, we really came back to how you deal with people and the respect you have for other people in the building. We didn't talk about that we should have a 4-3 defense or that the scouting system should be on an 8-point scale. All of those things, or that it needs to be done the New England way. It's how you treat people. It's how you the respect you have for others in building all of this together. So, keep that in mind, folks, as we're looking at these candidates and make sure we're focusing on the right things. Randy, been another great discussion here. Thanks, everybody, for coming along. We'll see you next week. If you want to find me, you want to find Randy on social media, I'm at SandoNFL. Randy is at RandyMueller_. Also, you can check out, he's got a great website with a lot of really good stuff on there. Is that Mueller Football?
That is MuellerFootball.com.
MuellerFootball.com. There's some good stuff on there. You'll find him expanding on stuff that we do here. Check it out. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Hey, football fans. This is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.